This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. There was a huge controversy a couple of weeks ago after National Football League referees messed up a call that cost the New York Giants a chance to win a playoff game. Print and broadcast pundits demanded apologies, dismissals, reforms. On Comedy Central's The Daily Show, Lewis Black had a different take.
New Jersey Assemblyman Anthony Imprevaduto. He's upset that the Giants, who play in Jersey, got knocked out of the playoffs after the referees botched a last-second call. He claims it cost the state a fortune in football-related income. So guess what? He's taking legal action against the National Football League. Hey, I lost $10,000 on that game, too. Let's make it a class-action lawsuit. Look, if New Jersey needs money, all they have to do is raise the sales tax on press-on nails. They'll make a killing.
The Daily Show has brought this splenetic character into the living rooms of America's basic cable households for 6 years now. If you've ever seen him, you probably have the same question I do. Who is this guy? Lewis Black is our guest here in Studio 3A. Later in the program, we'll talk about the popularity of reality TV. I promise these are completely different segments. Shows like Survivor and Joe Millionaire rule the Nielsen ratings, so whether we admit it or not, a lot of us are watching. Why? Is there one that has you hooked? And we have an email challenge for you. Send us a one-line description or a title for what you think would make the next hit reality TV show. The email address is totn@npr.org. We also welcome emails and phone calls for Lewis Black, who covers the weather, politics, pop culture, and everything in between. What in the news makes you laugh? Give us a call at 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK, and our email address again, totn@npr.org. Lewis Black, good to have you here in 3A. Welcome to Talk of the Nation.
My pleasure.
What was it like to be in Washington during the State of the Union address last night?
Exhausting. I'm from here, so to come back to when they're doing politics here, I prefer to come here when they're out of session. It's just too much for me to bear. My general reaction always was is that I wanted to just run down to Congress and just start yelling at people randomly.
Well, you could have gone to the mall. There were plenty of people out there demonstrating last night, yelling at the Capitol, doing just that.
Exactly. Yeah. No, I spent a lot of time doing that.
Do you consider yourself a political comedian?
That's a very good question. I never did. I did a lot of politics, but I just consider myself a comedian because it depends on what's around. I mean, there was a time after the Super Bowl, that last year's Super Bowl, the New England Patriots one, where literally...
The interesting one, yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, the good one, where half of my act became about the halftime show in that, which was, Pepsi and Coke and the Pepsi advertisement, Britney Spears, and why would you have somebody sing about Pepsi who can't sing, and then why do they advertise Pepsi and Coke, and who really cares about Pepsi and Coke? Does anybody really go into a restaurant and get upset if you order a Pepsi and they don't have a Pepsi and they're going to give you a Coke? Do you storm out? I probably think of myself more as social than political, but if there was cash in it, I'd say political.
Well, topical then, whatever's
yes,
that.
Yeah. Yeah. Whatever really crosses my eye and gets me excited, you know, that's really what the bottom line is for me.
One of the things I happened to catch your act at the Improv here in Washington D.C. On Friday night, and again from the Daily Show, our familiarity with you from the television. Almost didn't expect you to start off with a routine about the weather.
Yeah. It's you don't really. But that's really where I started. I try to start at a point in the act so that people can. When I first really started going around the country performing, I really felt that it. I needed to have a way for the audience to relate to me. You can't just jump into the middle of things. Even though I may have kind of created somewhat of an audience for myself, there's still those people out there who, you know, that you know don't get who you are yet. So if you, one thing is you establish, if you can yell about the weather and make people laugh, then, you know, then they get the idea that it's, oh, he's yelling about everything. Because it used to be I'd go on stage and start... I'd start on a subject that, you know, they would go, what is it? What? He is really angry. So for me, it's a place to always. I always try to find a place to start. If I'm in, I'll be in Atlanta this coming weekend. I'll talk about the fact that they've got to stop people from moving in there. They have too many people. They've lost their grip, and there's too much traffic.
Well, all of that is true.
Yes.
Did you start out to be a comedian?
No, I started out to be a playwright. Yeah, there was a good move. It was a real solid move. My parents were thrilled. The neighborhood was thrilled. Playwriting, woo-hoo, there's a way to go. You know, and if you have children and you really want them to lead lives of quiet desperation, that's the way to go is playwriting.
I read that at one point you also worked for the federal government.
Yeah, I did.
Doing what?
There was a time when they had a thing called the Appalachian. When I got out of college, I went to work and working for the government was a good thing. It was at that time, it was considered kind of an honor. I took the exam and I got this job at the Appalachian Regional Commission, which doesn't exist anymore. The Appalachian Regional Commission was a anti-poverty commission that I think started under either late Kennedy or Johnson administration, and doesn't exist anymore now because now that there's no more poverty in Appalachia, that we don't need the commission anymore.
Well, I figured the other alternative was maybe you killed it.
it was close. They were trying to kill it. I was actually working there when Nixon was president. And so I'm in there with all of these Republican appointees who are trying to dismantle the commission. And all I was trying to do, since I really wanted to do theater and kind of placate my parents in a way, was trying to get fired. And no one would fire me. But I was constantly in a rage there.
How did you develop that persona?
It really came about one night. I always kind of had that in me. I think it's that persona is really me when I was 14, and when I first started doing this for a living, I think that I didn't really have the anger under control. There's a fine line between entertaining people with your anger, and they go, oh no, it's scary now. And but a friend of mine, when I was on stage one night, said, you know, you're. So I started sitting on my anger more, and which made it worse, you know, because you're kind of like gritting my teeth and talking about stuff rather than letting it rip. And a comic said, when you go back up there, I want you to yell. And I started yelling, and that changed my life. it's really sad, but it's that simple.
Our telephone number again is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. Our guest is Lewis Black. Our first caller is John, who's with us from Greensboro, North Carolina.
Good afternoon, Mr. Black.
Hi, how are you doing?
Just fine. I think John Belushi and Walter Cronkite would be proud of you.
Well, that's very nice.
That's good company.
Yeah, that's very nice company.
My question is, did you happen to know Belushi personally or any of the crew of SNL?
No, and I'm a little bitter about that too. I never got an audition for that show, and so I really didn't know any of those guys that those first few years. I was also at that point studying playwriting and thought I was going to enter the theater.
You went to Yale Drama School?
I went to the Yale Drama School.
Are they proud of that?
Now that they think they can make some money if I come up there and do a benefit, they're proud of it.
You suddenly the alumni appeal starts.
Yeah, I had a rugged time at Yale. Theater schools in general or art schools in general can really be a terrifying place. I went to the Yale School of Drama much like my generation went to Vietnam. I was idealistic. I thought this would be great, and It was psychically damaging for a while. It was crazy, you know.
In what way?
You want to write plays? It's going to be, you know, that's the that maybe farming with you know something, you know, farming with Etruscan tool instruments in the middle of winter. Okay, those are your choices, and they're about the same. And so it's going to be tough enough. And their treatment of us, I thought, was way beyond anything necessary. They picked us. We're there to learn. We're going to have a hellish time when we get out, and they just made it. They made it more hell while we were there.
Okay, John. Thanks very much for the call.
Thank you, Mr. Black.
Thank you.
Here's an email. This from Sabina in Portland, Oregon. Thanks for having Louis Black on the show. I watch him on The Daily Show as often as I can stay awake, and if he's on. His piece on the end of the universe regarding the Starbucks restaurants is particularly memorable and strikes a chord in my heart. There are simply too many Starbucks on the planet. What was this about?
And now in Washington, I notice you're doing it. I was in Houston, and I came out one evening after doing a show, and I was going down the street, and on one corner there was a Starbucks, and across the street from that Starbucks, in the exact same building as that Starbucks, there was actually a Starbucks, and I'd never seen anything like that. And I thought, you know, this is truly the end of the universe. When you build a Starbucks across from a Starbucks, that's it, and you can tell this if you look at your watch, actually, time stands still.
On this show, it does from time to time. You know, new form of physics from every once in a while. Let's go now to June, who's with us from Newport News in Virginia.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm so glad that you're on because I didn't know you were on The Daily Show, and I've been catching you on the Comedy Channel once in a while. But even though I'm a Clinton supporter, I loved your What Is the Meaning of Is.
Thank you.
I thought that was so funny and so good that I don't know how anyone could ever take offense to it. You are really hitting it timely, and I just wanted to know, you're so good on this political satire that I hope you keep it up.
I will.
Because comedy is the greatest thing we can have right now, and you really hit the buttons on it really good.
Well, thank you very much.
I thank you so much.
Thanks for calling.
Oh, by the way, are you on The Daily Show?
I'm on The Daily Show tomorrow night.
Oh, tomorrow night?
Yep.
Wonderful. Thank you.
I'm usually on Thursdays.
On Thursdays. Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks for the call, June. So that's the day you get out the tie.
Uh-huh.
That's the day you get out your tie.
Yes, exactly. That's the tie day. That's Elon tie day.
Let's go to Gina, who's with us from Chelmsford, Massachusetts.
Hi there.
Hi.
Do you have my reception? It sounds bad.
You're on the air, and we hear you fine.
Oh, good. Louis Black, you are just the funniest person that's ever been born.
Make some calls to the networks.
I would do my best. I actually saw you last year at Fitchburg State College.
Oh, yeah.
Which is where I'm a senior.
Mm-hmm.
And I seriously could not stop laughing the whole time. I mean, I thought you were going to just, like, at me and throw me out of the audience and tell me I was just really insane because I just could not stop laughing. You are very funny, very intelligent, and it's real, which is great.
Thank you. I really appreciate it.
And, I mean, I'm 21, and, you know, it's nice to see an older person, not that you're old.
Yeah, I'm old.
But an older person who just, you know, it can appeal on any level. So...
Well, the nice thing is I have that surprises me is I have a college audience and an audience that goes to all ages at this point. And I get a lot of families that come in to see me. You know, parents bring their 16-year-old kids, and it's the 16-year-olds who found me. And I find that it makes me the oddest family comic in the history of the country. You know, usually you take your kids to Barnum and Bailey.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, I was watching one of your specials one day on Comedy Central. My dad walked in and was like, oh, I love Louis Black. I was like, well, this is really strange. My father and I like the same comedian, you know?
Yeah, it's...
That generally means you're getting old, Gina.
But just thank you very much for letting me talk to you. You're a wonderful comic, and I hope you're on the air more.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Appreciate the phone call, Gina. If you'd like to get a question in, give us a phone call at 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're speaking today with furious comedian Louis Black about his stand-up routine and his role on Comedy Central's The Daily Show, and I guess there you're a sit-down comic.
Yeah, I do. I sit.
Yeah. Our telephone number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. And I've read that, you know, you start your gathering your material by reading the newspaper every morning.
Yeah, I wake up and just start reading until something strikes me, and then I usually have to calm down. There's usually something. Every so often there's a good day, but usually there's something.
Mm. We ran across a piece of Wire copy earlier today. This from that collection of news items referred to as odd that comes across on the Associated Press wire, and this one actually is Reuters, and we thought we'd ask you about it and just get your take on it. Let me read it a little bit for the audience so they know what it's about. Yes. A German circus director is on the run with his elephant after breaking a local authority ban on moving the deeply distressed animal, police said on Wednesday. Officials had ordered the director not to move the elephant, Kenya, because she was upset by the death of Ronnie, the circus' only other elephant. Police said man and beast had disappeared without a trace. Quote, it's easier to hide an elephant than you might think, a police spokesman said. Do you want to pick it up right there?
For crying out loud, it's easier. That's really, you know, you kind of wonder about the police in Germany. You think, you know, the Germans, when you think, wow, these are the people who were really... develop police work on other levels, and they can't find an elephant. And the fact that a guy would leave with an elephant, and that he would know it was distressed. I mean, how do you know an elephant's distressed? I mean, really, literally. It's not like they've got you've got eyes. It's not like you don't really, the trunk doesn't twitch. It makes you wonder how they figured this out. And that the Germans, I love the fact that it's from Germany. This is like something you would read in, like, Naples, Florida, you know? Usually somewhere in Florida this kind of thing would happen.
Elephants are very sensitive animals, according to the Wire story. Dieter Reineck, a local authority, says.
Yeah, they're very sensitive. They are. They certainly are. And they spend a lot of time, they watch their soaps, and they spend a lot of time really chatting about romance novels, and they dream. They dream of their elephant loves. How just sensitive animal. I mean, sure, all animals are sensitive, and we can't, because you got to say that, because otherwise 17 people call, what do you mean? And of course an elephant is sensitive, but sensitive, it's like, it's too human a quality to put to an elephant.
I'm sorry we didn't bring you another Wire story, another animal story from Germany that was on the wires just the other day, and this was about a guy who had brought an eel home to his family for dinner. And the kids fell in love with the eel, so they put it in the bathtub, and the eel lived in the bathtub for 30 years. And so they were going to, you know, they took it out and put it in a bucket. They trained it to swim into a bucket every time they needed to use the bathtub. But then, you know, the authorities came around and wondered if this was cruelty to animals to keep the eel living for 30 years in a bathtub.
Something that they would have eaten.
As opposed to dinner.
Yes, yeah. Unbelievable.
Here's an email. We have this from M. Strait. My husband and I recently saw you in the Detroit area. You did some jokes about the current administration, some jokes about airport security. We found it hilarious and right on. However, some of the other people we were with stated they thought it was too soon after 9/11 for this sort of humor. We were appalled. Where do you draw the line, or do you think you should draw the line when it comes to criticizing the current administration discussing 9/11?
I started criticizing the administration by September 14th, which I thought was a little fast out of the chute myself, but I was in San Francisco, and San Francisco doesn't really count because there's America and then there's San Francisco, and they live on a different time clock. It was almost as if that audience was much more receptive than other audiences. Usually I try to layer in stuff that gives me a sense of where that audience might be at. And now I find that I just think as long as there is, you know, that you're not talking directly about the death of people, you're not talking directly about horror, you're not talking, you know, it's the authority's authority. You can always yell about authority. Mm-hmm. You know, from the moment it started, you could yell, you know, from the moment it started, I live in New York. He didn't show up there. Okay, it's like if I'm in a high school, and let's say the high school burnt down, and everybody was outside on the football field, and the principal had split. You know, it's kind of like you're allowed to talk about the authority figure that way. I've always believed that.
Yet the Daily Show, hosted by Jon Stewart, it almost seemed to go into mourning for a while.
Yeah, they went into... I don't think we'd ever dealt with anything like that. Most of us, most comics, had, you know, you'd been through the Gulf War, and I was going downstairs when the first of the Gulf War, the first Gulf War, let's hope not, but the first one, and I was literally watching those guys, Arnett and was it Bernard Shaw?
Bernie Shaw, yeah.
And then whoever it was under the table. And I'm watching this, and I'm thinking, I mean, this is These are Americans covering an American war with missiles, American missiles coming at them. And I'm thinking, are they waiting for a pizza? And I mean, how are you even sitting there? But on my way down the stairs, I realized I can't talk about this right now because there's families that may have kids who are there right now, and you just don't, you give it. It's the old cliche, and it's not a cliche. It's tragedy over time equals comedy. Hmm.
Our next caller is Elsie, who's with us from Louisville, Kentucky.
Hi, is this Mr. Black?
Yes, it is.
Hi. Oh, you are so funny. Keep up the great work. I just had one quick comment.
Sure.
If it weren't for my horse, I never would have spent that year in college.
Thank you. Yeah.
Thank you so much. That just gives me so much laughter every time I think about it. That's and my friends are so bugged by it, too.
That's very nice.
thanks for the suggestion, Elsie. And what does it mean?
what it means is that it meant that I had a career. I was in a in Los Angeles, you know, wandering around auditioning for things, and I went one night to a International House of Pancakes, which is really, my health club. Because no matter what you weigh, there'll always be someone there who weighs 150 pounds more than you'll ever weigh. And I was sitting there, and a woman behind me actually said, if it weren't for my horse, I wouldn't have spent that year in college. And I was like, I went into... It was, what do you say? What do you even, up until that point, Dan Quayle was the vice president, and I thought, wow, he had really, you know, opened up the American vocabulary to a whole variety of things that were made no sense at all. But this was really, and I said, it's the kind of sense, if you think about it too long, blood will actually come out your nose.
Okay. Elsie, thanks very much for the suggestion.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Email question from Charles Rice in Oklahoma. Do you draw inspiration from other angry comedians, such as the late Sam Kinison or Bobcat Goldthwait?
I know Bobcat, and I didn't know Sam. And, you kind of do. You know, we all watch each other, and you get kind of inspired by watching. I really thought that I was yelling at the same time Sam was yelling, and I thought, wow. Look at him, he's really yelling. I said, I'm not even yelling as loud as he is. This could be a break for me. And it wasn't, but it certainly paved the way.
Let's go now to Zachary, who's in Boca Raton, Florida.
Hi, Lewis.
Hi.
Just want to let you know that about 10 years ago, my family had hired you for our aunt and uncle's private 50th anniversary party in upstate New York.
Oh, wow.
And besides just enjoying your humor, seeing a young comic, it was funny, you were giving us your stand-up while we were at the buffets, getting our food and looking at you and going back to the tables.
Yeah, I remember that.
And to this day, we still like to tell that story and follow you through Comedy Central as well as seeing you in the comedy clubs. And certainly there's plenty of anchor in the world today for you to be able to keep going with comedy for a long time.
Well, thank you.
But to keep up the good work,
thank you for that.
See you on Comedy Central. The other thing is, I know you come down. I'm in Boca Raton, Florida. I know you come to the circuit down here. Are you going to be coming down here anytime this year?
I'll be down there at some point. I'm going to be in Tampa Bay, and I just don't know when. But there's a website. Let's do a plug.
Why don't we?
Because I constantly do.
LewisBlack.net, which has my schedule on it for people.
All right. Look forward to seeing you back down here. I know you come to Fort Lauderdale or.
Yeah, and I'll be at West Palm in August, which is a good move on my part. I'm really thrilled with my management.
August
there.
In Southern Florida, that's good.
Yeah, good perfect. Time in the summer.
Well, I was going to ask about your agent. What did he book you, Zachary's house and then the palace?
Yeah. No, actually, it was the Metric 50th anniversary party.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. I remember that. And I really appreciated it because it was a time when I desperately needed money.
And it was just great. I think it was comical for us to see you doing the stand-up, but at the same time, you've got all of our family members eating, looking at you sitting down laughing. It was a whole big thing, but you just stuck with it the whole time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for the call, Zach.
Sure.
Let's go now to Melanie, who's in Chapel Hill.
Mr. Black?
Hi.
This is so funny that you mentioned that you felt like you were started your anger at 14. I have a 17-year-old, and periodically after he reads the newspaper, we think he's channeling you because he gets so wrought up and starts ranting about the stupidity of the world. Do you have anything I can kind of lay out there to help get him through this period, or is it just going to continue till he's 45?
No, that's it. He's locked into it, but he should... he could. The good news is at least if he just keeps it around the table, you don't really want him bringing it into an office.
It does tend to get out there amongst his friends, and they just look at him and say, "Go to the politics room" when they're at a party. Called the politics room, and if you get off, you have to go to the politics room.
Well, that's good that they've got that, because I really, I think my career was slow to take off because I literally went into meetings, and there was no differentiation between what I thought about society and the way that I acted in public, and I would go in for meetings with big people, and I thought if you told them the truth, you're an idiot, that there'd be no problem, and it kind of slowed me up a bit. So
it seems to work for Michael Moore, but I think he's maybe an exception to the rule.
Yeah, no, he cut his own swatch, but it didn't help me. But I think your son's headed in the right direction, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, he certainly appreciates having at least one other adult who clearly thinks the same way he does.
That's very good.
Thank you.
Well, you can tell him I'm emotionally stunted.
Okay.
There may be a 12-step program for this.
Yes.
Let's go to Linda, and Linda's in Medford, Oregon.
Hi, guys.
Hi.
Hi, Mr. Black, I hate to pressure you, but I wonder if you know the kind of social responsibility you have, because it seems like all these young college kids get their information from guys like you. They don't really read anything. My son saw you at Cal Poly San Luis Obispo, and he just loved you, but he learned a lot from you, too.
Yeah. No, I it is a responsibility, but I can't really look at it as a heavy responsibility, or otherwise I can't entertain.
Yeah.
But you do have to realize that, I mean, for me it's a thrill, since if I'm not going to have children, I can screw up the kids of my friends. but I think it's a way. What's great about those kids is this is allowing them, at least I think, and I'm talking about Comedy Central and The Daily Show, or Conan, or the shows that provide satire.
We call him the other Conan, but
what really is provided is these kids. I think this generation, more than most, is developing a real sense of humor, and I think that's the way in which they're viewing life, and that's more important than the and that's more important than the information. Mm-hmm. Sometimes is just being able to laugh.
Yeah. Well, he did enjoy you, and I appreciate your points of view as well, so keep up the good work.
I certainly will try.
Thanks for the call, Linda.
You bet.
You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Here's an email somewhat along the same lines. During the tumult following the last presidential election, I gave up on real, unquote, news, and for several weeks got all of my political coverage from Lewis and his colleagues on The Daily Show. I've also noticed that more and more politicians are willing to appear on shows like The Daily Show. What's your perspective on the effect of satire and comedy on straight reporting in the current American political scene? And 800 words by tomorrow morning.
No, I think that the problem is... I yelled about this afternoon, earlier this afternoon, because I find it disturbing that Fox Network News, CNN, that they're all kind of going toward these roundtable discussions of, the McLaughlin Group. It's all about this kind of high-powered, it's almost as if they're stealing the comic's thunder, that they're trying to make entertainment out of news. I wish they would make the news... more interesting on its own and provide more information and let us handle. I literally am watching these shows sometimes. I'm going, that's my show.
They're crowding your act.
They are crowding the act. And I think that's a disturbing effect, because they're pundits. They're not entertainers.
Let's go to Eugene, who's with us from Ogden, Utah.
Hi.
Hi.
I love you. I think you're a great comedian. Me and my buddies are just driving down the road, we heard you on the radio. We were just wondering how high your blood pressure is.
Oh, my blood pressure is actually, what's funny is I've got perfect blood pressure. When I go to a doctor, it's unbelievable. And I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that pretty much 5 nights out of 7, I get to yell and scream until I calm down again. It gets it all out of my system. I literally have perfect blood pressure. It's astonishing, considering I don't exercise.
Yeah, you seem a little bit high-strung.
Just a touch. But you got to remember, I have to rest up all day to get there.
It was awesome talking to you.
Thank you very much. Enjoy yourselves.
Yeah, you
and get out and get out of Utah.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Trying to. We're on our way.
All right.
Back to Arizona.
Thanks for the call, Eugene. We just have a couple of minutes left.
Yeah.
What kind of life is it if you're on the road all the time doing stand-up comedy, two shows a night? Is this a way for a grown-up person to live?
No, but it's got its own charm. I know people in a lot of cities now, and so I get to see them. It's not what I would have, you know, you hope for the career, you know, in some instances where you go and you move to the next thing, you do your stand-up and you go right into a sitcom or this or that allows you to stay in one place. If you don't and you end up where I am, what you realize is you get the opportunity to go out there and see an audience that you cultivated. And you'd be crazy at this point after you spent 15 years cultivating an audience to go, you know, I'm not going to go see them.
You know, if they came up with a sitcom, you know, Lewis.
Yes.
You'd be crazy to do that?
No, I would do it now.
You would?
I would do it. Yeah. You know, I would do it if it was really something I wanted to do. I really like doing what I'm doing, you know, and it's fun. And it's, I mean, the people that we listen to, I mean, what I like is the fact that all you really want, and you probably know this from doing what you do, is to have a sense that you've affected someone. And that's the great part of it.
Well, one final email from Sally Stambaugh in Portland. I no longer share Neil Conant's question about Lewis Black. Who is this guy? For a long time now, Lewis Black has held the top spot in my carefully honed list of who to spend with eternity with on a deserted isle or in a crowded world. Does he know he's got a host of groupies out here? Lewis Black, groupies here too in Studio 3A. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
Lewis Black, comedian and commentator on The Daily Show on Comedy Central. He was with us here in Studio 3A.